From News Talk 580 1059 KMJ, this is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition. Now here's your host, Mark Kepler.
California's public pension system is in a crisis. The shortfall between retirement benefits that were promised and the money to pay those obligations, known as unfunded liability, continues to grow. And those increased costs are challenging governments at every level. Why do public pension costs in California keep climbing? And is there anything we can do about it? Our guest is Judy Lin with CalMatters, a nonprofit journalism venture that recently partnered with the LA Times and Capital Public Radio on a series of articles exploring the consequences of California's public employee pension challenge.
We'll also hear from Bruce Rudd, city manager of the city of Fresno, and Jackie Parks, former president of the Fresno Police Officers Association.
Additional funding for the Matty Report made possible by a grant from the wonderful company, harvesting health and happiness around the world. From the California Channel at the State Capitol and the Matty Institute, it's the Matty Report with Executive Director of the Matty Institute, Mark Kepler.
Welcome. While CalPERS, the California Public Employee Retirement System, is the largest pension system in the United States, many Californians, and indeed many of the 1.8 million beneficiaries, have precious little knowledge about this financial behemoth. Our guest is Judy Lin, who works with CalMatters, recently partnered with the LA Times and the Capitol Public Radio on an in-depth look at the state's public employee pensions here in California, and CalPERS in particular. So welcome back to the Matty Report.
Thank you.
So what is CalPERS? Who does it cover? What does it do?
It is actually the nation's largest public pension system. It holds about $300 billion in assets, and all of that is to cover, as you mentioned, the 1.8 million state employees, school workers who are non-teachers, cities and counties that contract with CalPERS. So this is, you know, from water agencies all the way up to Caltrans workers. These are
So it's not just state employees, it's also local employees.
Yes.
Though teachers, as you mentioned, specifically have their own pension system. So you're saying the amount of money that they're in control of, or assets that they're dealing with, about $300 billion. Yeah. Where does that money come from?
It's a combination through employee contributions. You know, they take a part of their paycheck goes to retirement. The employers, as in the government and taxpayers, put in a chunk. But by and large, two-thirds of that money is gains on investments. And that is...
Assuming there are gains on investments, right?
Yeah.
So how is that supposed to work?
And so the idea is that you pre-fund it. You know, everybody's pre-funding as an employee works during his or her working years. And once they're approaching retirement, there will have been enough gains to cover all of that person's pensions. The problem is we had two big hits. We had a dot-com
bust.
Big hits. Yes. We had a dot-com bust in the early 2000s. And then the recession, the Great Recession in 2008. That really, just in that 1 year, for example, CalPERS' housing portfolio dropped 50%.
Wow. Yeah. Well, a lot of people, I'm sure, if they're looking at their 401k, which is a different kind of pension, that's called a defined contribution plan. What we're talking about is a defined benefit plan. And just to be clear about that, a defined benefit plan is a situation where the employer basically is saying, we're promising you this benefit when you retire. A defined contribution plan, like a 401k, is you can set money aside, but if you make a bad investment, that's on you.
Yes.
So it's very different where the risks are in those
yes.
two systems.
Yes.
So a big crash, initially, I'm curious, are they looking to fund the entire liability, or they're trying to fund like a portion of it? I've read places where it's prudent to have 80% coverage of the liability. Others say, no, you have to have 100%. So I guess it depends what's considered prudent in terms of covering that liability.
Yeah, and so different people will give you different answers.
Right.
You know, ideally it should be 100%. That is the goal. You know, you better have a dollar to pay that pensioner
right.
for every dollar that you owe that person. But
they're not assuming everyone's going to retire at the same point, so they probably figure they can do the ish.
Yeah, there is
a little
bit. Wiggle room, obviously. Actuarial. Right. You know, accounting is a really complex
right.
and difficult
actuarial science.
Yeah.
It's my sister-in-law is an actuary, and so it gets very complicated very fast. So employees contribute a portion of their pensions, and then you said taxpayers, the government does as well. How much do each contribute?
Generally, the employees contribute probably 8 to 13% nowadays. Before, it was as little as 5% or none at all. Mm-hmm. Employers, right now, for example, the state, civil servant, the state will contribute 24. But things have gotten so bad because of those two hits that the unfunded liability is facing tens of billions of dollars in debt that the employers are having to pay more, up to 50% of a CHP officer's pay.
CHP is particular where they got, frankly, a very generous pension. And you can argue either way whether they should have that or not. I mean, they negotiated that, but that's what their pension is. So how is CalPERS administered? Who's on the board? How does that work?
So it's a 13-member board, largely dominated by labor, pro-labor supporters, Democrats. You know, you have employee representatives, employer representatives. The governor has two appointees, and there are statewide officers, for example, the state controller and state treasurer, who sit on the board.
Okay, so it sounds like the board is not a neutral board. It seems a little bit like it might be leaning a little one way.
You can characterize it that way, because it certainly is, Democrats definitely look to public employee unions for support, and the employees themselves want the pension system to protect retirees.
Yeah, and according to your reporting, 6 of the 13 are elected by active and retired employees to represent different constituencies, so they're specifically representing employees.
Yes.
Okay, well, up next, thanks for explaining the basics of CalPERS. Up next, so what about the decisions of Republican and Democratic governors in the 1990s that have apparently backfired, and we're dealing with those consequences today? We're going to have a conversation about that in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. We're talking with Judy Lin from CalMatters about California's public employee pension system. CalPERS board we were talking about earlier, fiercely independent of the legislature and the governor. But in the early 1990s, some things happened, really for a short-term fix for some unprecedented budget deficits that had some long-term consequences. What happened in the 1990s?
Yeah, let's start with 1991, when Pete Wilson comes in. He's a Republican. He had a plurality of votes. And he is, coming in to work with Democrats. And there's a budget deficit of like $14 billion.
And back in the day, that was really bad.
That's really bad. And so they're looking for any way to save without cutting the poor and students, and, schools of that nature. So they, Wilson maneuvers to get more control over CalPERS and wants to take over actuarial predictions and also take more control over the board. That clearly backfired. And
he wanted to take over control of the board, so the board would agree that maybe he wouldn't have to make as much in terms of contributions, right?
Yes.
Lower the contributions would mean he'd have more money to pay for that $14 billion deficit.
Yes, yes. And so he wanted to massage the rate of return, the use rosier assumptions. And so in response, labor put up an initiative. It was called Prop 162, and it barely passed. It just passed by 1%, if I recall.
That's a pretty close vote.
It's a pretty close vote. But it essentially locked in CalPERS's independence. And also, what's really notable is that it gave the CalPERS a directive that you shall make retirees your priority. Everything is about
exclusive priority.
Them. Yeah.
And before that, they used to have something called the three co-equal responsibilities, right? You were supposed to have a pension system set up to provide retirement benefits to government workers, to minimize contributions by the state, and then also to spend reasonably on administration. Those last two dropped, and the focus became making sure the benefits are received by the government workers, correct?
Yes.
And that changed how they basically operated?
Yes, very much so. It was... if you're thinking you're a city or a county making your contributions, you pay into this fund, but the board is not going to be responsive to you. So that could be frustrating.
It also made CalPERS kind of the sole and exclusive, they had the power to manage now this fund. They didn't have to really report to anyone. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to report to anyone, and their sole focus is making sure government pensions are paid.
Yes.
That's a big change. And I think that's a response, you said, to Governor Wilson's attempt to gain control. There was a pushback. So then we have 1999, 7 years later, and important decisions were made that really charted the current course that we're on. And that was done by Governor Gray Davis, a Democrat, with SB 400 that he signed. Tell us the story behind SB 400.
Yeah, well, in that, you know, switch from 1999 with the deficit to 1991 to 1999, you had a big swing. We're now in a dot-com bubble. You know, we're Wall Street seeing astronomical returns, you know, double digits. These surpluses are running high, and the numbers are staggering. And so here comes...
So you got a surplus now in the fund.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to worry about paying money. Mm-hmm. And so they're telling legislators, hey, don't worry about it. In fact, I think the projection was for the next 11 years, you're not going to have to pay anything. It didn't turn out quite that way because stock markets never keep going up. What goes up must come down. And so then what happened? They changed some things in pension formulas.
Yeah. So CalPERS comes before the lawmakers and says, hey, we have enough money here. Things are going so well. We can give our employees, our hardworking employees, retroactive and ongoing future increases toward their pension benefits. And this was signed by Governor Davis with very, very little discussion, apparently. The chief actuary at the time, Ron Sealing, did make a prediction that if things were...
He had three different scenarios, a very rosy scenario, a kind of okay scenario, and a bad scenario.
Yes.
And we seem to want to hear the bad scenario. Right?
Yes, and of course the bad scenario is pretty much what played out.
What happened.
Yeah.
What's interesting though, when you take a look at the numbers, they said Highway Patrol is a good example. Prior to this change in the law, typical average pension was $62,000. After this change, same person, same years of service, was now going to make $96,000 as a pension. So, I mean, you know, a third of an increase. It's a huge increase with that one change. So they made this change, and now the reverberations are now going forward because we had the dot-com bust and the housing bust. Stock market went down.
Yes.
And so the reliance on investment returns, that income wasn't there.
Yeah.
And so now we've got the hole that we're dealing with.
Yes.
Okay, so that leads us where we are today, and we're going to talk about the current liability. What does it mean for government retirees? And what extent is the public pension debt in California going up, going down, or staying the same? We'll talk about that in a moment. This is the Matty Report. Welcome back. We're talking with Judy Lin with CalMatters, recently partnered with the LA Times and Capital Public Radio in a series about the looming challenges with California's public employee pension systems. Several years now, there's been a lot of talk about this unfunded liability, the shortfall between the benefits promised and the money set aside to meet those obligations. So let's talk about those numbers. What are we talking about in terms of numbers here?
Yeah, they're pretty staggering. When Governor Gray Davis approved the increased enhanced benefits in 1999, we had a surplus of $58 million. Today, according to the state controller's office, and this is as of 2014, all public pension systems are facing a $241 billion liability.
That's state and local.
That is state and local. It's all public pension systems.
But you said system. Billion, not million.
Billion, yeah.
It's a big number.
It's a big number. On top of that, I would add that a lot of these local...
By the way, just to put that into perspective for people, the state budget is what? A little over $100 billion, right?
Yes.
$110, $120 billion.
Yeah, the general fund is about $110.
Right, so it's twice the size of the annual state budget.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, just put it in perspective.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I interrupted you. So we have this amount of debt. By the way, there's also something called public employee retirement health insurance. There's also an obligation there as well to pay for that. How much is that liability?
Yeah, that's in the tens of billions of dollars. The state alone has a $72 or $74 billion liability. Once a state employee retires, they get health benefits for themselves and their beneficiaries for life. Mm-hmm. It's a benefit that's worth about $20,000 a year.
Yeah, that's pretty significant. And I was reading in your articles, they're saying if you combine the public employee pension liability and the public employee health insurance liability, total $366 billion.
Yeah.
That's a big amount of money. And it's also, that means it's increasing the amount taken out of the general fund each year, right? So that money can't be used for other things. It has to be used to pay off those obligations.
Yeah, we've seen that obligation just skyrocket. It's hundreds of millions of dollars each year and growing. That's less money that's available for schools and social services.
I want to say it was $5.4 billion, I think, in the last general fund allocation. So out of a $110, $20 billion budget, $5 billion or so is to pay these pension obligations. It's not that you shouldn't pay those pension obligations, but just that number keeps going up. So why is that unfunded liability getting so big? Is it just problems with the investments?
There's that, yeah. And there, you know, to be fair, looking back, you do have state governments that took pension holidays that didn't make contributions when times were good.
These are local governments.
These are, yeah, and the state. Mm-hmm. And so there is that part. There's also the aspect that you talked about, the investments have not hit their marks. You know, there's an assumption that they'll return 7.5%,
yeah,
and we've fallen below that.
Yeah, but you know, if you look at the historical market average of what the market has done over the last, you know, 100 years, that's not an unreasonable number. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if it doesn't hit that, and then now we have a baby boom generation that's retiring, you get the double whammy.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, they're living longer. Yeah. So retiring earlier, living longer with a higher payout, and there's the gap. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like, you know, it's pretty tough to deal with this issue on the state level, politics involved. What about the local level? You know, you're hearing bankruptcies now in certain cities like Vallejo and San Bernardino and Stockton. Could we be seeing the public employee pension issue really be kind of shifting to the local level? Yeah. And seeing that's where the fights are occurring?
Yeah, and so, you know, so the state, obviously being so large, has the wherewithal to deal with the funding problems, the shortages. And so that the state is, by and large, other than less money for other things, can get by. Locals are in a different position, you know, where $1 million will be chump change to the state. $1 million could
be, and they refer to it as budget dust.
So, yes, yes. $1 million can take a special water district under, go into bankruptcy. And this is right now at a time when the economy is doing fairly well. You know, we've seen good job growth in our state. And so if things are already getting tight now, what does that mean when the economy does turn?
Yeah, and in your series of articles, you mentioned San Jose, and their pension liability went from $73 million in 2001 to $245 million in 2012. The city had to lay off 25% of its workforce, so it has some local implications. Before we get out of this segment, I wanted to ask you about CalSTRS, the state teacher fund, which you've written about. Education is beginning some pretty healthy increases. Is that fund okay, or is it the same kind of shape as CalPERS?
They're both under 70% funded right now, so they're both in not in the healthiest position. But at the same time, the governor did pass some reforms to increase contributions from the school districts and the teachers. So there is a plan in place. It's really so. Too early to tell. What we do know is that all the additional funding that's been going to schools, as much as 40% of that could be the growth of that, 40% of it could be going to pensions.
To deal with this issue. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit more about attempts at reform in a moment. This is the Maddie Report. Welcome back. We're talking to Cal Matters reporter Judy Lin about California's public employee pension system. You know, it's not unlike there haven't been attempts to address this issue. In 2012, for example, Governor Brown signed a bill that capped benefits, increased the retirement age, and required state employees to pay at least half of their pension costs. And the governor said this is the biggest rollback in the history of California. Has it had a significant impact?
It's hard to say. Some would say yes, some would say no, some would say it's too early to tell. But we do know that costs are still rising because mostly his reforms dealt with new employees. And the savings from those new employees won't be felt for decades to come as the workforce turns over. So
there will be billions of dollars of savings. It's just 20, 30 years out.
30 years out,
right.
Yeah. And so that's yes, he has reined in some of the most egregious abuses, like double dipping, spiking.
Spiking is where that last year they kind of, all of a sudden their salary goes from, you know, one number to $30,000 on top of it, and the pension's based on the highest salary.
Right.
So if you get 1 year of very high salary, you get that pension for the rest of your life.
Yeah, and okay. For new employees, it's now based on three, so hopefully that balances
Which is
out.
Pretty typical in the private sector, where pensions still exist.
Right.
Let me ask you about, it was a bipartisan attempt by San Jose Democrat Mayor Chuck Reed and a Republican council member from San Diego to put a pension measure on the ballot this year. They pulled it back, and they said, you know, we're going to wait for 2018, a non-presidential year. Was that all about timing, or was that maybe the public's appetite for this issue is just kind of waning?
Well, no. So it's always how it's presented, right? If it's a question presented to voters as, do you support pension reform? By and large, voters will say yes. But do you support taking death benefits from officers' widows? Or do you support cutting teachers and firefighters and their retirement benefits? The answer is no. And so it's interesting. I think what Chuck Reed ran into was how the summary was framed by a Democratic
Attorney General
Kamala Harris.
Right.
That was
who is running for U.S. Senate.
And, yes.
Okay, so politics may play a role in
yes.
this.
Yeah,
it's interesting though. If public employees, and I am one, you know, they say, well, listen, this is deferred compensation. You're paying me a low salary during my career, and you're deferring my compensation to retirement. Is the argument on the employee side correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and so I guess pay me now or pay me later. And so the problem is the pay me later is a little bit, it's hard now to meet that obligation. You know, it's interesting, a lot of local governments now are asking voters to approve sales tax increases, 80 this year alone, which is, I guess, the most on record. In a Bloomberg article, they said that, you know, a lot of these are aimed at, you know, specific projects, road projects or what have you, but some of them are just, hey, just extra cash for localities so they can meet their obligations. One of those big obligations public employee pensions. Are cities worried maybe that the CalPERS is going to drop the discount rate from 7.5% to 7%, which means the cities then have to put in more money to make up that difference? Are they worried about this?
Yes, absolutely. It's an ongoing issue right now with the CalPERS board. They're having to make a decision whether or not they adjust that rate. If you talk to, you know, board members like John Chung, Betty Yee, the state controller and state treasurer, their view is we should be slow and steady and think long term. And so they
don't want to make radical shifts, in
yeah,
other words, because that
yes.
could really hit a local government. I mean, if you drop that discount rate too much, all of a sudden you're asking a city or, you know, to pay a lot of money mm-hmm. into it. So they want to kind of ease it,
yes.
make that change over
yes.
time.
Yes.
It's hard to make that change, though, I'd assume.
Yes, very hard. And you know, it's a
because
tough
the focus
decision.
Of the board is also taking care of the beneficiaries.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you reduce it, you're having to make up it for investment somewhere else, you may have to go to more risky investments, and they may not produce the results that you want. They could be, you know, very devastating or return really well for you.
Yeah.
That is
the decision everyone with a 401k has to make, right?
Yes.
How risky do they want to be? How risk averse are you?
Yes.
You know, there was recently a Marin County case that some think may open the door to pension benefit reductions. Some people are calling it a game changer. What do you think? It's all about the California rule. You might want to explain what the California rule is and then what this decision did.
Sure. Generally, courts have been very favorable. Our history in California is that the courts have generally sided with protecting pensions. They saw it as a contract that, you know, when you signed on to be a city employee, this was the benefit you were guaranteed. So if you were ever to, a city was ever trying to take that away, they are supposed to offer you something
an equivalent benefit.
Equivalent, if not better,
which
benefit.
Is no savings than if it's an equivalent benefit.
Right. And that, so that it really locks in their ties, you know, locks them in on these costs. And so This decision that's being challenged to the Supreme Court is really being watched heavily, closely, because it cracks that door open and says, you know, no, you can make adjustments if it's reasonable.
Yeah, as long as it's a reasonable pension. Yes. So I guess we're going to find out what a reasonable pension is in the coming months. I want to thank Judy Lynn from Cal Matters for joining us. If you want to stay up to date on state and local politics, you can look at our e-newsletter, The Maddie Daily, or look at our website at maddieinstitute.org.
Up next, why is everybody looking to the city of Fresno regarding the right way to deal with public employee pensions? We'll talk to Bruce Rudd, Fresno City Manager, and Jackie Parks, former president of the FPOA.
You're listening to The Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, on KMJ.
According to a recent report, Fresno is only one of seven cities or states in the entire nation with a pension surplus. The rest are $6 trillion short because they're setting aside just 35 cents for every dollar promised. The Fresno City pension system, on the other hand, has been fully funded for almost a decade, and last year projected a $289 million surplus. How did the city of Fresno and its unions get it right when so many others got it wrong? We're joined by two people who are at the heart of solving Fresno's pension challenge, City Manager Bruce Rudd. Welcome, Bruce.
Thank you.
And former president of the Fresno Police Officers Association, Jackie Parks. Welcome, Jackie.
Thanks, Mark.
So, Bruce, let me start with you. It's my understanding the city of Fresno is not part of CalPERS. So how is the city of Fresno's pension system set up? Is there an independent board like CalPERS? Who oversees operations?
Well, there is two independent boards. There's a board that sits and is responsible for administering the public safety, fire and police pension fund. And there's another board that is responsible for the general employees pension fund. And on those boards, there's two representatives from labor, two representatives from management, and then an objective third party.
Makes the final decision, right? The neutral third party. Yes. We like those people, being one myself. So let me ask you to explain how those public employee pensions are financed. How much does the city pay in? How much does the employee pay in? How much do you rely on the fund's investments?
Well, 2/3 of the contributions come from the city, and about another third come from the employees. And then the overall difference in order to provide the benefits come from earnings based on those contributions.
What's the investment strategy? Is it a risky strategy, a conservative strategy?
Yeah, I think Jackie would agree. I think one of the things that's different than maybe some of the other retirement funds is that our boards collectively have always been very conservative in their investments. And as a result, there's been a lot of stability in our funds over a number of years. And even in the downturn when we had fewer employees contributing because we had to lay off people, the fund was able to was managed in a way that we kind of weathered the storm. And in the last couple of years, we did see a little bit of an uptick, which has helped us. But like everyone else, we're now seeing that some of those investments aren't penciling out as well as we had hoped.
You know, it's interesting. Recently, CalPERS downgraded its expectations for investment earnings from 7.5% to 7%, and they're going to phase that in over several years, like 3 years. It looks like, though, CalPERS is playing catch-up because the city of Fresno's retirement board had already reduced the assumed rate to 7%. And unlike CalPERS, there's no transition period. So why do you think, Bruce, that you guys were able to do this and change this ROI projection to reflect market conditions more quickly than CalPERS?
Well, I think, one, because the boards, again, and I've got to give a lot of credit to the boards and the representatives from labor and management, also our previous retired administrators, Stan McDivitt, been with the city for 30-some-plus-odd years, did a phenomenal job. Not to say that our current administrator isn't doing a good job, but the folks who sit on these boards recognize the ups and downs in the economy and had already started making some adjustments downward. I think we do it every 3 years, Jackie.
Yes.
And based on the returns, we made a conscious decision to start lowering the assumed rate based on the returns that we were seeing. So the recent reduction to 7% was already anticipated. It isn't going to create the same volatility that the reduction that CalPERS is adopted is going to create for a lot of public agencies. And that's exactly why it's going to be phased over 4 to 5 years, which
At CalPERS.
At CalPERS. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's an assumption that something's going to get a little bit better over the next 4 to 5 years.
Fingers crossed.
Keep your fingers crossed, because they may find themselves 5 years from now having to look at either an even further discounted rate or lowering that rate even further just to catch up, which is going to create a bigger impact on municipalities.
This is social in this area. Pay me now or pay me later.
It's going to come home to roost.
Yeah, Jackie, I want to ask you, from the union standpoint, what is your guiding philosophy when it comes to pensions?
Well, I think you have to have a pension system that's going to sustain recruitment and retention for public safety, whether it's police or fire. And you have to have a sustainable system. So you've got to come up with a formula that is sustainable for recruitment and retention, as well as a sustainable system, because at the end of our career, the last thing anybody wants is to not have any money in the pot so that you can retire.
Yeah, a promised benefit with no money is not a benefit, for sure. Well, let me ask you this. You know, police officers and firefighters, some would say enjoy, others would say they've earned pensions earlier and at a higher rate than other city employees. So, Jackie, you know, as former head of the police union, why do you think that's appropriate?
Well, first of all, I think it's definitely a very earned benefit. If you look across the nation, for law enforcement alone, you know, we're being targeted and assassinated simply for wearing a uniform. And there's no amount of money that's going to bring back anybody's life. And it's a very difficult job that we do. There's a demand right now for us to be perfect, as well as professional and ethical. And, you know, good law enforcement costs money, and you get what you pay for. So I think for law enforcement, definitely it is an earned benefit. And we
I noticed you didn't say firefighters. I'm not going to get into that.
Well, I would say for the firefighters too. I mean, you know, it's a very risky business for them as well. And I think the important thing for us is you want to, as a community, you want to have ethical, professional, and courageous law enforcement or firefighters, guys that are going to run to help you and not run away or hide.
Right. Those are two unique jobs. Firefighters and police officers are unique jobs, and you're in a dangerous situation just as a part of the job description.
Absolutely.
Bruce, let me ask you this. As a city manager for Fresno, so how did Fresno solve the public employee pension challenge? What was your formula for success?
Well, I think there was, as Jackie pointed out, there are times where Jackie or labor management may not agree on everything. But I think in the case of pensions and health care, which is also administered by a separate board, which is made up of both labor and management.
And you're funding that, the health care?
Yes.
Okay, so employee health care, retiree health care, in the state that's a big issue because they're not funding that. They're doing it as a pay-as-you-go basis, which is – that's another tidal wave. It's a whole other show, but that's a big issue. But in the city of Fresno, you are funding it.
Yeah, we fund our employee health care system. And, again, like our retirement, it's made up of a board that is represented both by labor and management. But those are two issues or two benefits or things that I think collectively – labor and management recognize the need to make sure that we can provide some level of a stable benefit package for all the reasons Jackie just pointed out, retention, recruitment. And so I think that the trick and what we've been able to do is that the benefits that we provide, especially when it comes to pension, provide for a good pension, but they're not as exorbitant of pensions as other cities have provided or even counties have provided. Which, as Jackie and I have discussed on many occasions, makes it difficult sometimes to retain employees because they have the ability to take their pension from the city of Fresno and go join another system and get all the reciprocity the benefits of
just
another.
Just staying right in the in Fresno alone, the difference between – I was reading the difference between the average pension for a city of Fresno employee, which is $39,000, is $30,000 less than a Fresno County employee.
Exactly.
That's a big difference. Jackie, what do you attribute the success of the public employee pension system in the city of Fresno? What would you say? Well, what's making this work?
Well, I think the obvious obvious point would be that it's not ran by elected officials. It is ran by employees that are vested into this system, and they're very well educated. They're not someone that is there that is just showing up at one meeting a month. These guys are educating themselves. They're aware of what's going on in the marketplace, and I think that says a lot to why we're ahead of other organizations or other funds.
But I think skin in the game.
Absolutely. And I think the politics doesn't play that big role in it. They're not worried about getting elected again or how they're viewed. And I think one of the big things is when they created our pension system, our benefits aren't these lavish benefits. You know, they're not going to jump off the page and draw everybody there. But we're over 100% funded, and there's a reason for that. And we took it a step further when they created a tier two in our system and then created the drop program, which is something that helps us to compete with PERS when they were at these, you know, the more elaborate benefits, 3% at 50.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about the drop program in a minute, but I also, Jackie, want to ask you and Bruce too about this question about, you know, public employee unions and employers have to compete for employees. Are you worried at all that the comparatively lower pensions given by the city of Fresno are going to make it more difficult for the city of Fresno to recruit and retain the best police officers and firefighters? Is that at all a concern?
Well, and I'll go first. I think we're already seeing that right now here at the city of Fresno. At one point, we had 849 officers, and through attrition, we got down as low as 698, I believe, in like January of 14. And the city has made an effort to try to hire as many officers as we can, trying to get our staffing levels up. And I think we've hired more than 250 officers over this two-year period for a net gain of only about 45 to 48 officers. We can't keep up with the attrition, and we need to be able to compete with that.
Right, the reality is you're in the market. Now, Bruce, I'd ask you the same question. Any difficulty in recruiting people? And here's a side point. Could it be that because the city of Fresno's pension system is so well-maintained, could that possibly be a draw actually to employees so that they realize, hey, if I go with the city of Fresno, that's a certain benefit. If I go someplace else, maybe not so sure.
Well, you know, a couple of things. One, CalPERS did adopt a newer system for newer employees, about 3-4 years ago, where the benefits are not nearly as good as those who are in the older CalPERS system. So in a lot of ways, our pension program, especially the fact that it is over 100% funded, is far more attractive now than going to work for a municipality or a state agency under the new CalPERS system. But Jackie's correct. You take the fact that an older, more seasoned officer can go to another city like a San Diego or a San Luis Obispo, who can go into that city and basically be grandfathered under the old CalPERS system, it makes it difficult, which is where we're seeing some of our biggest attrition numbers
the seasoned
officers. Right. You compound that with law enforcement in San Luis Obispo and the challenges and the level of criminal activity and the type of criminal activity that an officer faces in San Luis Obispo is far cry.
Yeah, but our weather's nicer.
yeah, okay.
So, Jackie, let me ask you. You were talking about the just drop program. How does that make up the difference for that typical 3% at 50 that we normally hear about, that police formula? How does the drop program work?
Well, it's DROP stands for Deferred Retirement Option Program, and it's actually a little complicated to try to cover in a short period of time.
Here,
so I don't want to get into that. But in short, what it does is it helps limit the pension liability for the city by locking in the employees' percentages early and at a lower rate. And in turn, the benefit to the employee is they're able to invest their retirement funds while they are already working and or continue to work.
So they basically stop working in terms of the pension calculation, but they can continue to work for up to 10 years.
Correct.
So they're collecting a salary, but their pension money is sitting there waiting for them. So at the end of that 10 years, they then collect that pension money essentially.
Correct. And then there are commingling the pension fund into a separate investment, the drop account. And so when they actually separate from city service, they will have their retirement amount and then they have their drop amount, and they commingle those, which is a benefit and a financial gain for the employee.
You found a way to solve that problem. So, Bruce, let me ask you, what can other cities and counties learn from the city of Fresno's experience?
Well, I think they, one, need to be a little bit more conservative with their approach as far as investments. They also need to recognize what their returns actually have been. And I get the it's going to have an impact on their ability to deliver services, but it's either pay now or pay later. And I think the state has already recognized that by the fact they already revamped CalPERS for new employees. But the challenge for the state and those agencies that belong to CalPERS is that people are living longer, and therefore the mortality tables and the benefits are going to increase, especially as baby boomers start calling on those benefits. So I would encourage them to sit down with their labor representatives. I think one of the things, and I will acknowledge Jackie's leadership, is that when we were facing some of this, one of the things that we came up with during some discussions is increasing the contribution or reducing the city's contribution and having active employees actually contribute a little bit more, and then even newer employees contributing a higher percentage towards that in order to mitigate the impact. So it really is a partnership, but recognizing at the end of the day, both of us have a responsibility to our current employees to ensure that benefit's available for them when they do retire.
Okay, well, up next, what does the city of Fresno's best practices on public employee pensions mean in real terms for city services? That conversation in a moment. This is the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition.
You're listening to the Matty Report, Valley Views Edition on KMJ.
Welcome back. We're talking about public employee pension issues with Bruce Rudd, the city manager for the city of Fresno, and Jackie Parks, former head of the FPOA, the Fresno Police Officers Association. You know, according to a state controller's report, the pension payments in local governments in California have almost tripled in the last decade, going from about $6 billion to over $17 billion. The city of Fresno, however, is increasingly being cited as an example of best practices when it comes to dealing with public employee pensions. So, Bruce, as the city manager, what do you say are the implications of not having a large pension debt?
Well, the implications of not having a large pension debt is that you actually have funds available to do things like we've been trying to do over the last couple of years, and that's to restore city services after the Great Recession.
You really connect those dots between the pension payments and city services.
Oh, absolutely. There is a direct correlation, because what you're spending or what you're not having to spend on pension is you're able to spend on public safety, parks, street maintenance, all those services that a municipality provides.
You know, Jackie, I want to ask you, you often hear about being fiscally prudent when it comes to the level of funding for pensions, and the debate appears to be over how much of a reserve you should maintain. So, of course, the more you keep in reserve, the less money you have to do other things like hire more police, fix potholes, maintain parks, et cetera. Fresno's pension systems have never fallen below 100% funding on an actuarial basis. Could or should the city drop that to 90% so it has more money for those kinds of things? Or are we talking about a slippery slope there?
Oh, definitely a slippery slope. I would caution anybody from looking at a quick fix. And to me, that would just try to be a quick fix. I think you really need to look within yourself and work as a partnership between the city and labor. You have to find ways to recruit and retain officers without jeopardizing the sustainability of your program. And as you mentioned earlier, that a sustainable system that is 100% funded should be a draw. Unfortunately, a lot of young officers that have come to us, they live in the now and not in the future. So they're looking for their car payment, their house payment, schools for their kids, clothes and toys, jet skis or motorcycles or stuff like that. And they don't think out to that future. And I would caution anybody for going to that quick fix. Focus on looking at contributions. We talked earlier, Bruce mentioned our health care, and that's a shared contribution between the employees. Mm-hmm. We don't have employee-paid healthcare when we retire, there are a lot of options out there that are fair, that help sustain our healthcare, that help sustain our pension, and allow for the city and our employees to have that at working environment that we can provide for our community.
Taking the long view. But Bruce, I want to ask you, city manager, it'd probably be nice to have a little extra money to do things you really want to do, fix those potholes, hire more police officers. 10%. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Come on, 10%.
So I'm probably the last city manager that you'd want to ask that question, because as Jackie's heard me before, I am a strong proponent of having adequate reserves. Like, some of the financial challenges the city faced during the downturn is that we had very little, if no, reserves anywhere. The general fund is working to get a 10% reserve. But in contrast, I will tell you, the other departments that are funded by ratepayers, they have 25% reserves. I am an advocate of having a reserves of 15 to 20%. A 10% reserve in the general fund, for example, will maybe cover 1.5 to 2 months of payroll. So when it comes to reserves, I'm a strong supporter of reserves, because there will be another downturn. And the last thing you want to do, whether it's a pension fund or it's a health care or providing city services, you do not want to be cutting service as a result of not putting money away to make sure that you can sustain this over the long run.
You know, the other thing, too, because you're fiscally prudent, it then makes it easier for you to borrow money. You have a better bond rating. And so that there's an advantage there to the city fund, general fund as well. Bruce, let me ask you this, though. You know, recently there was a judge to challenge the sacrosanct nature of public employee pensions, writing, quote, "While a public employee does have a vested right to a pension, that right is only a reasonable pension, not an immutable entitlement to the most optimal formula for calculating the pension." An appeal of that decision is now before the California Supreme Court. What are your thoughts on the principle of pensions being a vested right, and what are the implications if that principle is challenged?
Well, we'll have to see what the Supreme Court decides, because the understanding or the underlying principle of a vested right to a great extent is a promise or a commitment made by an
organization. It's called deferred compensation.
It is. And so I understand the financial impacts or implications, but it's a little concerning that on one hand someone made a deal, an agreement, and now because of the impacts of that agreement and or because of other decisions that were made, that the only way to resolve that is now going back to the other party and go, well, that was then, but this is now. And it really does kind of go to the core or the root of the commitment that was originally made by the parties when they entered into that agreement.
So Jackie, what do you think? Is that breaking a promise?
Absolutely. I agree with Bruce. I think it's a slippery slope. I'm disappointed that we're having to go down that road, and I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court will eventually rule in favor of the vested right.
Okay, well, let me ask you this. You know, it used to be that, you know, my dad worked for the phone company, and he has a traditional pension like a lot of people, you know, 30, 40 years ago. That was very common in the private sector. But private sector pensions have gone the way of private sector unions. As a result, most non-union private employees only have 401k plans, if anything. And the financial burden and risk of retirement has really been shifted from employers to employees. So I'm just wondering about this whole issue of public employee pensions. Instead of demanding a traditional pension from their private employer, it seems like the public has some animosity instead about the fact that public employees do have traditional pensions. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would agree with you that there is we call it pension envy, that there are many folks that are not a government employee that feel that government employees do not deserve a pension, or that their tax dollars are being wasted by providing them a pension. And I would completely disagree with that. Pensions are in lieu of salary. If we weren't receiving that pension at the end of the day, we're really just deferring salary. Otherwise, there would be a higher demand. And you think about it, particularly for public safety, how would you get men and women to come out and be willing to unconditionally help somebody for minimum wage or for $15 an hour.
And what or for specifically no pension.
Absolutely. And what type of person are you going to get ethically? And I think we see that in some countries we border and Middle Eastern countries. There isn't a trust of the government. There isn't a trust of the police or law enforcement. And
you know, sometimes people
you pay what you, know, you some, get what you pay
some
for.
Some police officers in those other jurisdictions say that's just it's not a bribe; it's a tax, right?
Yeah.
But Bruce, as a city manager, we've only got a couple of minutes left in this. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, traditional pensions, does that help the city attract recruit
well,
the best
employees? Well, I think the other thing the public probably doesn't recognize is that employees, public employees, don't contribute to Social Security. And so there is no Social Security benefit at the end of retirement. So it isn't as though they're going to get the public employee pension or the pension benefit and Social Security.
It depends on the public employee.
Well, in our case, there is no Social Security benefit unless there were quarters or enough quarters paid before they came to work for the city of Fresno. But there is no Social Security benefit for the majority of our employees once they work for us for an extended period of time.
You know, it's a very interesting and very complicated conversation that I think we're going to be hearing more about in the future. I want to thank our guests, Fresno City Manager Bruce Rudd and Jackie Parks, the former president of the Fresno Police Officers Association, for joining us.
The views and opinions expressed on the Matter Report are those of the individuals participating in the program and do not necessarily reflect those of the California Channel or the Maddie Institute. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the points and opinions expressed on the Matter Report, visit our website at maddieinstitute.org.
The Maddie Report, Valley Views Edition, is a public affairs partnership between KMJ Radio, Cumulus Media, and the nonpartisan Maddie Institute, providing the Valley with valuable insight and analysis on politics and important public policy issues. This is KMJ.